Welcome to Nightlife, the podcast.
It's something that's very important, though it's not something we probably talk about at dinner parties. Something we need to address very soon. Toilet technology. What's long served us may not serve us forever. While sanitation infrastructure is typically lauded, one expert warns that infrastructure that the flush toilet depends on is inefficient, it's costly, it's outdated. Joining me now is Chelsea Wald. She's a science and environmental writer and the author of Pipe Dreams, The Urgent Global Quest to Transform the Toilet. Chelsea, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you wrote in 2007 that the British Medical Journal's readers crowned the sanitary revolution the most important medical milestone since 1840. Why is it time to move on from that important medical milestone?
Yeah, well, the British Medical Journal's readers weren't wrong, exactly. The sanitary revolution of the late 19th century was really a miracle and did amazing things for public health. But many people I talk to for my book think it's now time for a new sanitary revolution for the 21st century, one that not only corrects for some of the flaws of the previous one, but takes new challenges of our century into account. For example, most people are familiar with the fact that toilets waste water. So that might be something that you know about toilets and what's wrong with them. But it's just really one small part of the picture. For example, that water, it dilutes the resources that we're putting into our toilets, like nutrients and energy, in our pee and our poop, and it just makes it harder to recover those resources, which is something we're going to need to do going forward.
When you got into the business of being a science and environmental writer, did you see this path towards writing a book about pipe dreams and toilets in your future, or was this a growing interest?
That's a good question. I studied astronomy as an undergraduate. So
okay, wow, from the gutter to the stars.
Yeah, that's quite far from this topic. It's something that came to me. I didn't pursue it at all. In 2013, I got two assignments. One was to write about new technologies, innovations for contexts where people have no toilets or have very poor toilets. And that's you know, billions of people in the world who lack even basic or, let's say, adequate sanitation. And then the other one was about cities, and it was about how where we can find heat, sources of heat in our cities. And one of those places is sewers. And so when I was writing these two stories, I kind of made a connection. Wow, there's a lot going on here. There's a lot of potential that we aren't taking advantage of in our sanitation systems for all different kinds of contexts. And then I just, over the years, just my curiosity just took me to new places. And then I realized there was so much going on that it deserved a book. And that's how I ended up being kind of a toilet journalist.
What would you say is good about the current system that we use? What's being done right in the way we deal with sewage?
Well, those of us who are lucky enough to have access to working sewers, toilets and sewers and wastewater treatment plants, I mean, we live, you know, much cleaner lives as a result, and we get to live our full lives. Children aren't dying from diarrheal diseases. We don't have outbreaks of typhoid fever and cholera. Our homes and our cities don't stink. So, I mean, there's a lot to be said. There's a lot to like about the toilet infrastructure that we have inherited from the 19th century.
Okay, but as you say, it was more than 100 years ago. What's changed in those 100 years, apart from the obvious, which is population growth, to mean that it may no longer be sufficient? What are the new challenges?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of challenges that the inventors of the toilet systems couldn't have imagined, or they weren't really trying to solve. Climate change is a really major one. And you mentioned growing cities, this rapid growth of cities is another issue. Resource scarcity in general, soil degradation, toxic pollution, and we're creating chemicals and using chemicals that they had no idea would be coming into coming into existence, plastics, disease outbreaks, new disease outbreaks. Of course, they knew about diseases, but they couldn't have imagined antibiotic-resistant pathogens, for example. And then, you know, we have increasing focus on inequality in our societies, and that's something that is going to be a challenge going forward as well. So toilets, as we have inherited them, exacerbate many of these problems, make them worse. But they also, if we transform our toilets, they hold the potential to actually make them better, to help solve some of these problems.
What role has stormwater played in traditional sewer systems?
Yeah, so the first sewer systems, and this is a model that spread around the world. I'm not sure what you have there in Australia, but our combined sewers that combine stormwater and household water, including from our toilets, and these are designed to overflow during heavy storms, like flooding events, or even just heavy rain events, because if a ton of water sewage flows into wastewater treatment plants, it can overwhelm them and actually break them, take them offline. So that's what you see during hurricanes, for example. If they get overwhelmed, they can actually go offline for a month at a time, and during that time, sewage isn't being treated. And so these systems over time were sort of developed to overflow and send raw sewage into waterways instead of to the wastewater treatment plants. But even separated systems, you have sanitary sewers that during floods, since they're buried underground and they're not really well sealed, you can end up with sewage in floodwaters. And with climate change increasing the frequency of these events, the severity of these events, you can see more and more the problem of sewage becoming part of the problem that our societies deal with when it comes to climate change and climate change related events.
What about the discrepancy between our more, you know, affluent areas and less affluent areas? If municipalities can't afford to add treatment stages to remove pollutants, what impact does that have?
Yeah, I mean, those are related questions, and they can be separated as well. But certainly what we see around the world and within cities is that people's access to sanitation and how much they're affected by issues of sewage overflows or pollution that comes out of our sewage systems, you know, really is connected to their wealth and power within society. And then many municipalities around the world. So let me back up for one second, is that one effect of putting everything together in our sewers is that, you know, all these modern chemicals, pharmaceuticals, microplastics wash into them. And then conventional wastewater treatment, which was developed in the early 20th century. So, when those things didn't really exist, weren't the conventional wastewater treatment wasn't designed to break these down. And around the world, many utilities aren't even required to sort of monitor for them. So that means that wastewater treatment plants end up being sort of unwittingly concentrating and dispersing some of these pollutants into the water or into the solids that come out of the wastewater treatment process. And sometimes those solids are spread on land as a kind of fertilizer. And that's just one way in which this old system is having a hard time dealing with these new challenges. And it just becomes more and more expensive to add on to them, to help them keep up. And why maybe rebuilding in some cases from the ground up with these new challenges in mind might be the better solution.
You mentioned the impact of climate change already. What exactly is the link between climate change and this getting worse? Is it because of the extreme weather events and the higher frequency of extreme weather events that means that the system is getting more frequently overloaded?
Yeah, so I talked about the problem of too much water, but there's also the problem of too little water. So when you have drought events, you know, our sewers need water to flow. They need a certain, like flow of water in order to work. So in Cape Town during a couple years ago, during their close call with, you know, day zero running out of water altogether, they did an amazing job at conserving water. They stopped showering so much. They stopped flushing their toilets, but their sewers also stopped flowing. And then they started stinking. And this has happened in other sewer, in other cities where they've done a really good job of water conservation. And what the cities have to do in the end is sometimes flush out the sewers with water anyway, send other water down and through the sewers, or use chemicals to treat them. And what they were thinking of doing in Cape Town, which they didn't do, but you could imagine it would work, would be asking everyone to hold their flushes for 2 times a day. So like just asking everyone to flush their toilet in the morning and in the evening one time, so that there would be enough water flowing through at least one time a day to get all the gunk through the sewer to the wastewater treatment plant. But even that is imperfect. So you can see these systems require water. So climate change, so our systems are vulnerable to climate change. So that's one aspect of it. Power outages, they're very linked to power. They need a constant supply of power. So if you have like a heat wave that causes a power outage, or you know, some other event that causes power outages, then you can, your wastewater treatment can go offline. Sea level rise, a lot of these wastewater treatment plants are located at a low-lying point because sewers use gravity. And so it just makes sense that the sewer water flows down to the wastewater treatment plant. But that puts them like right in the line of, you know, sea level rise. And then they're also heavy energy users, because the way wastewater treatment plants work, conventional wastewater treatment requires aeration. So you have to pump air through the sewage, and that's just energy intensive. So depending on where that energy comes from, wastewater treatment plants can have high greenhouse gas emissions, and they also emit greenhouse gases like methane themselves. And there's some work being done trying to figure out how to kind of lessen those emissions coming from those systems. And then on the other hand, these systems can become solutions in climate change. So you can create energy from what we put into our toilets. So they can be a source of energy, or at least they can become energy neutral if you use the right technologies and you save energy where you can in the process.
You write in the book that what's considered the superiority of the traditional system could also be the biggest flaw. That's that half of the world's toilet waste ends up not actually making it to treatment.
Mm. Yeah, this is what the experts call safely managed sanitation. It's what many of us take for granted, that our waste will be treated. I've talked about some cases when it might not be, say this wastewater treatment plant goes offline. But in a lot of places, there are no wastewater treatment plants, or the wastewater treatment plants like never work. They're basically broken. So, you know, you might have a sewer, you might even have a flush toilet, but that goes directly into a waterway ultimately. And then, of course, many people in the world, billions of people, have inadequate toilets. They might use buckets. They might use toilets over flowing water. They might many use pit latrines or some form of like a septic tank, a good one or maybe not a good one. And sometimes these are reasonably nice to use, and sometimes they're really disgusting. And one of the problems with pit latrines in cities in particular is that when they fill up, there are often not good services available to empty them. And so unregulated workers, stigmatized workers will come and empty the pit latrines, but then they don't have any place to take the waste that they've taken out of the pit latrines, and they might just dump it into a local waterway or even just sort of bury it next to the house. So there's all kinds of things going on in cities around the world that aren't safe at all. And the reason that we see a lot of failure with these wastewater treatment plants and sewer systems is that they are really unwieldy and costly, and they're just not really well suited for many parts of the world, you know, especially places that you can imagine are very densely populated, where there's not, you know, organized development. It's, you know, there's got to be other solutions that are better for those environments.
Well, let's turn to those solutions now. We've established many of the issues with the traditional system, while amazing when it was first built. Where would you begin if you were given the role of World Commissioner of Sewerage Systems? how would we go about fixing the issue?
Well, I'm not sure we need a top-down approach so much like that. So I would not want to be in that role.
Okay, sure.
but we do. What I think is that we've, you know, inherited one idea of this ideal kind of toilet system, but we really should have a lot of different systems to choose from that fit different environments and different contexts. You know, people need to see, you know, what resources do they have? Do they have regular electricity, or, you know, do they have lots of water, too little water, whatever, you know, and be able to choose from a kind of wide selection of gold standard toilet systems that are currently in development, but, you know, that, but we still have this one idea of what a toilet is and what it should, you know, where it should go to, and a sort of centralized idea. But decentralized ideas are under development, and they're coming up, and some of them are very interesting. Some of them work, for example, in a single building where you could treat the, you know, say an apartment building, you can where the treatment for the toilet waste happens in that building, say in the basement or on the property, and then the water gets recycled into the building for air conditioning, you know, and the poop gets turned into fertilizer for use on the property as well. This kind of thing is happening in San Francisco and in the Netherlands where I live. And then I saw, for a very densely populated, very low resource context, I went to Haiti, where I saw a really interesting program where they're actually servicing toilets that have containers in them. So people rent these toilets, they have containers in them, and then they put their containers out on the street, basically, a couple times a week for pickup by professionals who go and take it to compost. And this is really interesting in Haiti because Haiti has extremely depleted soils, and so this compost is really kind of a valuable resource for those soils. And they're also experimenting with other ways of reusing the poop, which is really great because it doesn't have water in it, so that they can do so much more with it. And one of the things is that they're experimenting with feeding it to the an insect called the black soldier fly, the maggot, the larva stage of that insect. And then they eat the poop, they get nice and plump, and then that can be fed to livestock as a protein source. So there's lots of stuff you can do if you really have kind of pure poop, or it's mixed with a dry cover material, but not with water, and that's an opportunity there. And then I've also seen a lot of interest in urine diversion. So urine as a resource is very interesting as well, because it has very few pathogens, but lots of nutrients. It has all the nutrients, and so you can make fertilizer from it very easily, as well as some other products. So you can kind of think of the toilet as a recycling bin, where if you separate the streams, you can do a lot more with it than you can if you mix it all together, mm-hmm. also with water, also with stormwater, also with industrial wastewater, you know, where then separating it becomes just energy intensive, very costly, and you know, just not that smart.
So with everything mixed together,
it's something that our cities have to do, but it's not the smartest way to do it.
So with everything mixed together, it's essentially it's mostly waste. Whereas separated, each component can be put to some kind of good use.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that our cities are working hard to do wastewater recycling, which is really exciting, coming out of wastewater treatment plants, finding uses for that water rather than just releasing it into waterways, also using the nutrients. There's new ways coming up, and also exciting new ways to recover the energy in it. One project that I saw So this sludge that comes out of treatment plants is the byproduct of wastewater treatment. It doesn't, it's not like the poop just kind of like dissolves and goes away, but it, you know, it gets eaten by bacteria and then those bacteria die. And then, you know, there's always sort of the residual material and it has nutrients in it, but it also has energy in it. And there's one project that I saw that puts this sludge, which is a very wet substance, under high pressure and temperature. And it's kind of like recreating in a very short period of time the conditions that formed fossil fuels, wow. You know, way back. and it creates a kind of biocrude that can be used as a transportation fuel. So that's being tested now in Vancouver and or will soon be tested at in a demonstration plant in Vancouver. The plant's being built, and so if it proves to be something that can be done really reliably, it's a bit of a game changer because most of the uses require drying out wastewater sludge because it is such a wet substance, and making fuel usually has to be dry, but this process actually requires water, so it's like the pressure and the temperature does something to the water, the chemistry of the water, that allows it, the whole kind of organic material, to turn into this biocrude that can be used as a, you know, as an airplane fuel, which is, I think, super cool.
During the pandemic for the last over a year, we've seen how important it was for scientists to be able to analyze wastewater. Is the ability to analyze wastewater as closely as they are something that these solutions will make easier and mean that we can get more data?
Yeah, well, this is another way I think of it, is another way we can take a better advantage of the systems we have in place. So this is an advantage of a centralized system where you have like all of everyone's poop flowing into, you know, one place or one of very few places and mixing together. Because that means that our sewers or wastewater treatment plants can be kind of a urine and stool sample of the whole community. Whereas if you have these, like if everyone uses, say, septic tanks, you know, then you would have to just go and sample everyone's septic tank. And that wouldn't be, it wouldn't respect people's privacy necessarily, and it wouldn't be very efficient. But we do put lots of information into our sewers. And luckily, it turned out that people shed bits of the coronavirus genetic code. It's not infectious, fortunately, in this case for the coronavirus, but or it doesn't seem to be, they shed it in their stool. So scientists were able to figure out really quickly that they could test wastewater to monitor outbreaks as a way of supplementing other public health data like, you know, the PCR testing that was going on in cities. And they can also, in the future, if they keep these programs going, get a lot more health information out of sewers too. Not only the coronavirus, but tracking everything from illicit drug use to seasonal flu to even things like general stress levels in the population. And people have been working on this for a while, but it seems that the pandemic has really increased interest in this, and that we'll see a lot more of it. And if it's done right, this can allow you to do this kind of public health work without violating anyone's individual privacy, because it is this sort of joint sample of the city, and doesn't require pointing our finger at any particular one person.
We had a text in from a listener while you've been talking, Brant, wondering about the disposable wipes that form the huge blockages in our current sewage system in many countries. Is this something that you've looked at in terms of how we can avoid that problem, or is it just as simple as people should stop flushing disposable wipes down the toilet?
Well, I love this question. In fact, it is that simple. People should stop flushing wipes. I did look at some solutions. So people flush wipes down the toilets now more and more, and even more in the pandemic, it turns out. And this mixes in sewers with cooking oils, like fats, oils, and grease that restaurants and individuals pour down their kitchen sinks. And these kind of do this mad chemistry down in the sewer and create these big fatbergs that block systems. They cost a lot of money to take out. And they're also, it's also what I've found talking to people is that it's pretty hard work for the sewer workers who have to go down. It's dangerous work too to go down in the sewer. So they, you know, it's not ideal in so many ways. And one company I talked to is because it has all these fats, oils, and grease in it, they're able to take these fatbergs and convert them into energy.
Wow.
The energy from the oils, but it's not ideal. I mean, that's not a solution to the problem.
It's more of a problem than the solution, you know, solves.
Yeah. It's just making the best use of an extremely bad situation, or making the best out of an extremely bad situation, as opposed to, solving the problem. There's also some people working on bacteria that can maybe be, or microbes of some kind that can be put down in the sewer that to kind of eat up some of these clogs. So that people don't have to go down. But again, that's also, making the best of a bad situation. This is another way in which these older systems aren't coping well with modern problems, like these or modern conditions, I guess, like these wet wipes. Well, I guess it's a modern problem of just our disposable culture, isn't it?
Yeah, you can say that again. Well, hopefully that message will get out there, but people will stop doing that. Chelsea, yes, Wold.
Only the three P's, pee, poop, and toilet paper. Flush those. That's okay.
Chelsea Wold, author of Pipe Dreams, The Urgent Global Quest to Transform the Toilet. I really appreciate your time. That was fascinating.
Oh, thank you so much for your great questions. I appreciate your interest.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.